Welcome to Tiny Spark. I'm Amy Costello. We're devoting our first show to looking at fraud in international adoption. International adoption is the kind of topic we're drawn to at Tiny Spark, mainly because it's seen by many people as a good thing.
In the beginning, I thought it was a win-win. And turns out that it's not like that at all.
Jennifer Hemsley agreed to sit down and talk to us about the dilemmas she and her husband confronted trying to adopt a girl from Guatemala. Their dilemmas highlight the legal, moral, and ethical complexities that persist in international adoption to this day. Their story's next on Tiny Spark. American parents have adopted 250,000 children from other nations in the past decade. Many of them came from Guatemala. But in late 2007, all new adoptions were suspended there over concerns about fraud. Parents began looking for children to adopt in other places, like Nepal and Ethiopia. But problems started cropping up there, too. Last year, Nepal all but closed its doors to international adoptions, citing concerns about corruption. And just this year, Ethiopia announced that it, too, would curtail adoptions by up to 90%. The government was deeply concerned about widespread fraud there, too, and said it was unable to cope with the surge in demand for children. In order to understand why corruption in international adoption persists, and whether anything can be done to curb it, we're going to look at Guatemala during its adoption heyday. And we start there with Jennifer Hemsley and her husband, Todd. When they began the adoption process, they were experienced. They had adopted a girl from Guatemala in 2006. A year later, they found a photo of a beautiful 4-month-old girl on the website of a U.S. adoption agency and decided they wanted to adopt her, too. They named her Hazel. The agency told the couple that Hazel's mother had given her up. Apparently, she was too impoverished to take care of the girl. Jennifer and Todd began the adoption process right away, but soon Jennifer began to have suspicions. This time around, the couple found themselves waiting and waiting for Hazel's paperwork to come through.
I was requesting her medical records and her immunization records from the adoption agency, and they just kept dragging their feet. And then when I finally got them, they were just typed Microsoft Word documents with no signatures, no letterhead. And I knew from spending a lot of time in Guatemala and living there that even when you buy a pack of gum, you get a very detailed receipt, you know, with time stamps. And so something as important as this, to have it come this way, to me seemed very suspect.
You then got the results of a DNA test, which was supposed to prove that the woman who had handed over this child, Hazel, was in fact her biological mother. And what happened with those DNA results?
Well, I first saw the paperwork when I was still in Guatemala, and I looked at it, and I was completely blown away by the falsifications on the DNA test.
What kinds of falsifications?
Well, the first thing that I noticed was that the date stated that the sample was taken was my husband and my anniversary, October 4th. And I knew darn well that Hazel was not giving DNA on that day. I had custody of her in Guatemala. So that really concerned me and opened up this whole world of, you know, my God, what can this mean? Why would somebody obviously put this falsification on a very important piece of legal paperwork? You know, whose DNA was sent in? Was it hers? Well, it certainly wasn't sent in on that date. And what it meant to me was that the DNA test wasn't worth the paper it was printed on.
And so when they were recognizing the concerns that you had, were they at the same time encouraging you to just, you know, don't worry about these minor details, go ahead with the adoption, this all looks good to us? Or were they saying, yeah, we're concerned too, and just hold on and let's find out what's going on?
Oh, no, it was absolutely, you know, the impression very strongly was I was a problem. I was making a big deal out of nothing. Some of the people in Guatemala said, oh, she's crazy. You know, why is she asking these things? She must not want the baby. It was very frustrating because nobody wanted to look at the problems and address it. You know, sort of popping my head up and raising questions was really frowned upon.
When Jennifer started raising concerns about fraud, Guatemalan adoptions to the United States had reached their peak. It was 2007. That year, Guatemala, a nation the size of Tennessee, was sending an average of 12 infants and children to the United States every single day. The image of this many children leaving Guatemala captured the attention of Erin Siegel. She was at the airport in Guatemala City that year and was struck by the sheer number of American families she saw leaving the country with children they'd just adopted. Erin began to do some digging into the subject, which turned into a book released this month called Finding Fernanda. It's about adoption fraud in Guatemala. Erin knows Jennifer Hemsley and says other parents she interviewed suspected fraud in their cases, too.
For adoptive parents, a lot of sources that I've spoken to confidentially were afraid. They didn't want to know what the truth was, just in case it was something horrible.
And there were horrible things going on in Guatemala during the years when it was sending thousands of children to the United States. In her book, Erin details kidnappings. She describes stories of teenage girls who were told their newborns died at the hospital. The infants are then put up for adoption. The central character in the book has her baby sliced from her womb in what she describes as a non-consensual C-section. The infant is then offered to an adoptive family in Tennessee. Adoptive mother Jennifer Hemsley did not want to be in a family like that, unwittingly raising a stolen child. But I asked her whether she was ever tempted to just look the other way and adopt Hazel, despite her misgivings.
Absolutely. Of course. But I couldn't do that. That's wrong. That wasn't right.
And you have a husband who was in this process with you. And I'm curious, when you go back to those days when you were going over these questions in your head, these really profound moral, ethical questions about the genesis of your daughter, who her mother was, why she was being put up for adoption, why all these documents were being falsified. What kind of questions were you and your husband wrestling with at that time?
We were very concerned that her mother might be looking for her. We were deeply concerned about that. We, you know, loved her desperately and still do. So, of course, it was, you know, tempting to consider like, oh, well, if we just shut up and look the other way, then we could probably, you know, adopt her and bring her back to Los Angeles. But we knew that we couldn't live with that. I know I certainly couldn't. And I know Todd, my husband, couldn't live with that either. I mean, I don't, you know, how do you go through the day? How do you wake up in the morning and look yourself in the mirror? And, you know, it's been pretty deep, as you said, profound questions that would haunt me forever and everyone. And, you know, Hazel and all the children from Guatemala deserve to know, in the very least, their identities, their truth, their origins. And I wanted that for her.
No hard data exists about the number of children from Guatemala who came to the United States on a trail of fraudulent paperwork. But author Erin Siegel told me about a conversation she had with an investigator from the trafficking unit at the public prosecutor's office in Guatemala.
An investigator looked at me once towards the end of our interview, and he just said, "The thing about this, it's just so sad. There's going to be an entire generation of Guatemalan children growing up in America with great lives, and someday they're going to come back here and they're not going to know where they came from. And they're going to come to us and they're going to ask us, where am I from? Where is my family? What happened to me?" And there aren't going to be any answers. It's possible to trace a birth certificate back to, you know, where it was issued, try to find that registrar, try to find out whether that registrar was one that was accused of taking bribes, of manufacturing paperwork. There are ways to do it, but it's very costly, and it's also it takes a lot of time.
And I can't help but think that it could be dangerous.
Absolutely. It very much could be dangerous, and it's delicate. It's delicate.
Jennifer Hemsley discovered just how delicate it can be when prospective parents start raising questions about adoption fraud. Jennifer became Hazel's foster mother and lived with her in Guatemala for 6 months, along with the other girl she had already adopted from there. During that time, Jennifer continued to notice irregularities in the way things were proceeding, and she began, as she puts it, making noise about potential fraud. That's when she was told she could no longer be Hazel's foster mother. She and her older daughter had to return to the United States. Several months later, she returned to Guatemala and discovered that Hazel had been put into an orphanage. Jennifer was devastated when she saw the little girl again.
She was really sick. All the kids in there were. She had gotten a rash that had gotten infected on her face. She had, you know, kind of dried food in her hair. I could tell she hadn't been bathed for I don't even know how long. And I could tell just from her expression that she probably had never been out of her crib. And a very long time, so it was really hard to see her like that. It was awful. I wanted to just run out of there with her, but I couldn't because I, you know, had no legal right. I had to get a court order to even be able to see her.
But you did get her out of there.
I did within 24 hours. Yeah. And I assisted in getting the place closed down because we found out later that they were only feeding the children like a nutritional supplement mixed with water.
Jennifer says she has received hate mail from adoption supporters who blame her for having Hazel put into an orphanage. But Jennifer says she had no control over where the little girl was placed, that Guatemalan authorities put Hazel there, and Jennifer and her husband paid thousands of dollars in attorney's fees to get her out. Undoubtedly, many orphans around the world are suffering in conditions like the one that Jennifer found Hazel in, and debates about corruption risk overshadowing the real needs of children languishing in substandard care. I asked author Aaron Siegel if the corruption can be tackled, whether international adoption is an inherently good thing.
I think, as a concept, absolutely. It can and should be an inherently good thing. But without sufficient regulation, money corrupts. It's very simple. You can't go to a very poor country with very little infrastructure with $30,000. If no one tracks money in international adoption, there is no way of knowing exactly where children come from, whether their families are induced to give them up or paid to give them up, bribed to give them up. And I think it's been very easy to turn away because there aren't hard facts about percentages, exactly how many cases were corrupt, exactly what happened when. But without that kind of data, I think it's really hard to move forward, especially when adoption economies are setting up in places like the Democratic Republic of Congo. I mean, how do we as a country move forward with our well-intentioned adoptive families? How is the public protected? How do we know that we are adopting children genuinely in need if our government isn't willing to sort of step up a bit more, if there isn't sufficient legislation, and if there aren't checks and balances? It won't work. It hasn't worked, and it will continue to fail. And again, this failure isn't 100%. There are plenty of adoptions that are good and not corrupt and not fraudulent and authentic. The problem is we don't know how many. It's impossible to know. I mean, look at China over the past year. China's been held up as kind of one of the gold standards of adoption, a clean system, you know, children that are definitely in need. And yet, over the summer, hundreds of children were exposed to be in a baby trafficking ring. This past week, another ring was exposed in Shanghai, 17 trafficked babies. We learn about these things in retrospect, and we'll continue to learn about them in retrospect unless there is kind of a greater legislative system in place to check and balance the money in adoption.
Aaron wanted to find out how much the U.S. government knew about child trafficking and fraud in Guatemala during the many years when it was processing visas for children to come to the United States. She knew that all children who left Guatemala would have had their paperwork and visas processed at the U.S. Embassy in Guatemala. So she filed several Freedom of Information Act requests and eventually received a trove of cables from the U.S. Embassy in Guatemala, correspondence spanning the course of two decades, memos never seen by the public until now, according to Aaron.
The cables show that there was always some corruption. There were always women selling their children, and the embassy knew that. There were always imposter birth mothers showing up and relinquishing children that weren't biologically related to them. And there were always financial incentives that did drive this corruption, and the embassy did know that.
Aaron, what are American families who have adopted children from overseas who may suspect the origins of their children or read books like the ones that you've written and hear these stories about corruption? What are they supposed to say to themselves now?
There's nothing to be ashamed of. That's, I think, a message that is very important for adoptive families to hear and to accept. By having a kind of reckoning, by having a kind of reconciliation with a truthful version of history, by understanding what really did happen, I mean, how else can we move forward? There is no other way. And it's not an adoptive family's fault that corruption was occurring. Assigning blame, I don't think, is necessarily helpful. But understanding who did what and when is.
It appears lessons are being learned. Approaches to international adoption are changing. Many nations are deciding it's best for children to be raised in the countries where they were born, whenever possible. And fears about corruption are leading to action. An international agreement called the Hague Convention aims to protect children, birth parents, and adoptive parents from fraud and exploitation, and works to ensure that intercountry adoptions take place in the best interests of the child. Jennifer Hemsley's journey for the truth about the girl she wanted to adopt from Guatemala finally came to an end when she figured out the real story about Hazel's birth mother.
We did a lot of research and investigations on our own about that, and I believe that we have found her, yeah. And we do not believe it's a case of kidnapping, as far as we understand and believe.
So knowing that now, do you wish you had adopted Hazel?
Well, I don't know. Then I would be living every day with incredible doubt, and that's where I would be. I mean, of course, there's times when I think, oh, geez, you know, we should have just gone through with it, but we wouldn't have known the answers. We wouldn't have known. We would have been living in this horrible, awful cloud of doubt.
And Hazel's now living with a nanny, as you say, who she's known all her life in a nice part of Guatemala City. And that's a living arrangement that you pay for.
Yes.
How has this whole experience affected your finances?
Well, we're pretty much financially devastated at this point. My husband and I took out a second mortgage on our house in LA, and it went to 5 lawyers in Guatemala, travel expenses, get various court orders from judges for various things, you know, custody, stuff like that. And we spent our retirement. It's gone.
Why?
Well, we love her very much, and we've made the commitment to making sure that she's happy and healthy and well cared for and will go to the best school. We hope very much that she can come to the United States and live with us, maybe as an exchange student. She'll definitely come here for college. And we've made the commitment that she will have what she would have had with us, but it's going to be in her home country.
Jennifer Hemsley, when you look back at this whole experience, do you have any regrets?
Yes. I have a lot. I mean, I think we always look back on things in our life and question if we did the right thing, if we did it the right way, if I said the right thing, if I was, you know, and I think we did the right thing. I do, overall. I wish, actually, I had made more noise. I wish I hadn't been as scared as I was a lot of times. And then, you know, maybe I could have made more of a difference. I guess that would be my only regret, is that I wasn't more of a pain in the ass.
You know, the whole premise of our show is to look at the business of doing good. And whether that's a commercial enterprise or a personal endeavor like yours. And I'm wondering, I'm just so curious, after everything you've been through, how you look at concepts of doing good. And what does doing good mean to you?
I think a lot of times doing good has become a business. And after our experience, I think we look at many things, charitable organizations or that do good, quote unquote, with a lot of skepticism. It seems like people who do good sometimes, not all the time, sometimes have other incentives. Maybe it's not as pure as we might want to think.
Jennifer Hemsley, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you.
Jennifer Hemsley is an adoptive mother living in Los Angeles. We also spoke with Aaron Siegel, author of the new book, Finding Fernanda. For more about international adoption, please visit our website, tinyspark.org. And while you're there, please let us know what you think of today's conversation. You can also drop us an email at ideas@tinyspark.org. Tiny Spark has made its debut through a generous contribution from the Chronicle of Philanthropy, which connects the nonprofit world with news, jobs, and ideas. Find them at philanthropy.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Amy Costello.